Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That means it's time for Stunt Trek with yours truly, Uncle Jim, and the one and only Leslie Hoffman. How you doing tonight, Leslie?
Oh, I'm doing okay. A little wet up here, but not bad. Well, earlier this week, we definitely had a downpour, but it's kind of nice up here right now.
No snow?
Not yet. Maybe next week.
And joining us as well is Admiral Ken. He's down in Albany, New York. How you doing, Ken?
Okay. I've been writing, which is why I sort of asked you whether we're having the show, because if you weren't, then I could continue writing.
Yeah, my family and I literally just got back from camp about 20 minutes ago or so, unloaded the car, brought the dog in, got everything set up, ran to the computer, programmed the show, and just got everything set up about 5 minutes ago. So it was pretty close, but it was such a perfect day that we decided to stay up at camp a little bit longer than usual. So I apologize for that. But we do have a good show planned for you guys, of course, as usual. I don't think we're going to talk about Planet of the Apes tonight. I don't think so. But you never know.
Then again, you never know.
That's true. We might meander our way into Planet of the Apes somehow, but it's not planned at this time.
I mean, I feel like Marlon Perkins doing Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. Somehow getting insurance into anything having wild animals. I mean, it's like...
You never know. So, you guys may have heard about this little thing going on called COVID-19. It's this little pandemic thing you might have heard about. Due to that, Hollywood is shut down. All the TV shows are shut down. Canada has closed its borders to the United States, which has created some interesting problems because a lot of shows are shot in Canada. Actors are not being allowed to cross the border from the United States into Canada. Even baseball teams, the Toronto Blue Jays, are not allowed to play baseball games in Canada, so now they're playing in New York. So New York now has three baseball teams, the Yankees, the Mets, and the Blue Jays. So all kinds of problems have been created by this COVID-19 thing. But we thought we would talk a little bit tonight about back in 1918 when the Spanish flu pandemic hit the United States, Hollywood shut down. And actors, I believe silent films, yeah, everything was silent back then. Were they moving into sound films yet?
It was probably just on the cusp, if it was.
Yeah, I think we were still into silent films. We may have been starting some talkies, as they were called, but I think they were mostly
talkies. Talkies were 1927.
Okay, so,
yeah,
we,
it's 1918, 1919 would be silent films.
So Hollywood was completely shut down. Studios were completely shut down. And even some of the more famous actors at the time who I don't know of any of these people, so I won't mention them. And I doubt that any of you guys do either. But actors were succumbing to the Spanish flu and losing their lives over it. And a lot of the bigger actors were forfeiting their salaries so that people could continue to work. And it was pretty bad. People didn't think Hollywood was going to survive. They didn't think Hollywood would be able to bounce back from it. It was so bad. Movie theaters were shut down. And it was just a bad time for the entertainment industry. Let's see. Approximately 675,000 Americans lost their lives to the Spanish flu. And Ken, how do you think that projects to what we're seeing today with COVID?
Well, again, okay, first of all, I'm going to try not to get political, because that's not really my expertise, at least as far as infectious disease is concerned. But I will say, however, that like virtually every other challenge that we've faced in that area, you know, since and then, the situation, as you can no doubt, because the death toll was somewhat less, the situation was the people cooperated with the authorities, or if there were strong police actions or something to support the outbreak, there wasn't that much fuss about it. So that I think that's the difference. If you're looking at the numbers, what I mean, because it probably in terms of severity is certainly up there with COVID, if not, up there, if not just slightly below in terms of severity, in terms of being pathogenic. Without complicating matters any, yes, coronaviruses are relatives of flu, but not flu.
Yeah,
roughly the same, exactly the same. But yeah, it was a question of everybody did what they were supposed to, and that's why correspondingly there's less of an issue.
Yeah, an article that Leslie sent me, which I looked over before the show, said that there were studios that were actually handing out masks to people. And they didn't have the antibiotics and things that we have today, so there were all kinds of strange remedies that people were doing to protect themselves from the flu. Some of them were really weird. But the masks caught me. I was like, oh, they were passing out masks in 1918. Interesting. And as you said, people were eager, more than eager, to cooperate and do whatever needed to be done to get through the pandemic at the time, which unfortunately, I mean, without, like you said, getting political. And again, this is difficult because some things I don't consider to be political, and some things I think are made political that aren't political. And I think saving people's lives and protecting each other from a virus is in no way political, in my point of view. And I think that if social distancing and wearing masks will save lives and prevent the spread of this disease, then it's not a political. It's not political at all. However,
I dealt with it for 40 years. In essence, public health is public health is public health. Protecting people against infectious disease is just a simple concept of do you or don't you want to get sick? And if you don't want to get sick, then you will do sort of what we tell you, but why we're telling you these things is because we want you to stay well. And again, the communication gap that's been going on with respect to COVID is people don't understand or can't understand that They're trying to keep people alive. That's our only mission in this, is to keep people alive. That's it.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Again.
I think that like Leslie, for instance, where Leslie's at, people are at extremely high risk in your area, right, Leslie?
Oops. Of course, when you ask me a question, that's when. Well, where I'm living at is an independent living building, and the average age is 85. So, yes, if the virus were to make it into the building, there's a good chance we'd probably lose about half the people here. I mean, it just... But then... As for the counties, which is Essex and Franklin County, it's been actually very low rate. Yeah, but then again, there's only 5,000 people in Saranac Lake as opposed to what's down in New York City where, you know, or the big cities across the country. I mean, obviously... I'm sure there's some kind of mathematical ratio, so you have these really high numbers in the big cities.
Absolutely.
But again, not to get broiled in statistics, but the thing about this is that if you look at it, again, per capita, in terms of population, if you look at both deaths, and people that get sick, they're not really that far apart from each other, at least statistically speaking. I mean, the rate of death is the rate of death, and it's pretty well within a percentage of each other. Either way, it's the same throughout the entire country. Again, as you pointed out, it's one of these, if you really thought about it, you'd understand. Obviously, if you have more people are going to get sick because there's more people. It's not that the germ is stronger in New York City than it is in Saranac Lake. It's just there are more people to infect.
Right. You know, living in Los Angeles, there's a lot of homeless camps all over Los Angeles. And probably the homeless people obviously don't have the best health care or the best hygiene. And of course, my phone is ringing.
They're on to us, Leslie.
I don't know. It can be quiet all day long. And 1 hour, people will start calling. Anyways, I was starting to say the homeless camps and things like that, poor hygiene, probably health problems and people are going to get sicker, but I'll just go quickly in the opposite direction. That no one has really explained this to me, is that when I was a child, not that I was a part of one of these, when I was a child, measles, mumps, chicken pox, parents used to have children's parties where there was an infected child at the party to infect the other children so they'd get the disease and they'd get over it and they'd be, you know, they would have the antigen in their body. So,
the principle is called herd immunity. And in the absence of vaccine, does it work? Yeah. There's no doubting that would work. The downside with respect to COVID is for herd immunity to work with COVID, you would have to have 70% of the United States sick.
Yeah, I mean,
so
which,
you would
which.
For herd immunity to work with COVID, you would have to have approximately 280 or 290 million people sick.
Yeah.
You know, right
wow.
now we have
which,
like five.
Which then
you know, right now we have five.
You, of course, and the health
have
community could not. 180
million people sick for that to work. Because, again, it's one of those things, if you explain it, it makes a lot of sense. If you have, say, 12 people, and 10 have COVID and 2 don't, the chances of those 2 people being infected is less, because almost everybody else has had it, so they're immune, so they can't infect the 2 that remain. But if you have 2 people that have COVID and 10 people that don't, then you'll infect people quicker because you have more people to expose.
Right. Well, that's the whole scary thing about when school starts up again.
And again,
you know,
the
are we just going to have this, as opposed to where they just call it a second wave or a third wave, are we going to have a tidal wave?
That's why the infections are happening so quickly in the schools when they're opening, and why they were happening so quickly in the camps when they were opening, is that you have, say, in a population of 500 campers, maybe you have 20 that have COVID and 400 and something that don't, because the 20 people might be asymptomatic. So you have 20 people and you have a farm of 475 who aren't. Well, everybody almost gets infected that way, because you have all these people that don't have antibodies, the virus is just going to take over. That's what the problem is with camps and schools, is that everybody doesn't have COVID, and the people that do are probably asymptomatic. So yeah, it will wind up being a royal mess when all is said and done, and there's no way to sugarcoat it, and there's no way to make it sound nicer. And there's no way to kind of make it warm and fluffy. I mean, this is what is going to happen. And in the state, say, the only saving grace is, say, an example of someplace in the state of New York where, yes, you have large numbers of people, but right now our infection rate is like less than 1%. So the problem is, in a population of like 500 people, you might have 490 people that have already had it.
Right, right. Well, and as they say, the whole thing about this virus is some people barely show any symptoms at all, and other people just can't breathe anymore. So,
well, yeah, that's you
know,
like I said, it's the asymptomatic people that are the problem, because, I mean, obviously, I mean, at least I would like to think so. Obviously, if you know you have COVID, if you're absolutely positively sure you have COVID, you shouldn't be walking around. I mean, I hope so. I mean, again, 40 years of doing this, is like, I sincerely hope that the people are intelligent enough that if they're actually physically sick, that they're not wandering around.
No, I was not alive in 1918 for the Spanish flu. I don't think Ken or Leslie were either. So,
well, at least not in this life, but no.
I have nothing to compare it to, but why do you think Hollywood and the American people in general responded so favorably to the treatments that were presented for Spanish flu in 1918 in 6 months? This article says for 6 months. Yeah, in about 6 months, the worst of the Spanish flu had come and gone through the United States, and things were getting relatively back to normal. They lingered for another couple of months, but for the most part, in 6 months, of this disease came and went. Looking at COVID today, right now, that doesn't seem to be the case, and Hollywood is having all kinds of problems. Well, civilization in general. Why do you think it was so different in 1918 versus 2020? What do you think the major differences are?
I can offer a theory, because obviously I'm not really involved. I don't really have a lot of knowledge in the industry, but just from what I can surmise, first of all, Hollywood was smaller, and secondly, I'm trying to think of when the studio system started.
Well, also,
studios were a lot more cohesive and self-contained back then than they are now. I mean, for all intents and purposes, we really don't have studios anymore. That wasn't necessarily the case in 1918. I mean, that's just, you know.
Well, okay, in 1918, World War I was ending. And soldiers were coming back, and obviously what happened was there were soldiers infected with the Spanish flu, and they're arriving in New York City, and there was filming across the United States. I mean, I kind of named it Restarting Hollywood, but it was restarting the film industry. I mean, so people in the film industry and probably vaudevillians, I wasn't able to really research that, were coming down with the Spanish flu. But in 1918, they wore masks and they were sprinkling people with some kind of disinfectant. But, the studios back then... Well, I guess you can call it greed, is that the studios knew that they had to keep filming during that time because they wouldn't survive. Now, interestingly enough, theaters closed anywhere from a couple months to 6 months, but as for filming movies, no television in 1918, They kept filming. They never stopped. I really couldn't find an article on just how many actors or crew people got the flu. I mean, they listed ones that got it and almost died, and one. Famous silent star that got it and did die, but that's about what's left of the history of the film industry in 1918. But I come back to, you know, maybe it's an unanswerable question, is that they just, I mean... Yeah, yes, 675,000 American lives were lost due to the flu, but people got the flu, they either died or they got better, and filming went on, and you kind of mentioned it, is that this is when the studio system started, because there were actors, named actors, that were refusing to do film. So Adolf Zukor, which you would have to look him up to, you know, see all about him, actually created the studio system, which I guess in reality really forced people to work whether they wanted to. You know, you had a choice. You're either going to be in this movie or you're not working. So that's what started the studio system. And the interesting thing, actually going up to date, I don't think I listed it, but believe it or not, I think it was the Supreme Court just ruled that studios can own theater chains again, which that was the whole Antitrust Act in 1947 was, or later, was that, you know, studios would own theaters and they would show their own products, which means like independent films, you know, couldn't be shown unless there was an independent theater somewhere. So what legally broke the studio system was that, let's say, Paramount could not own a chain of theaters. But like I say, it just happened that a judge ruled that studios can own theater chains again. I still was, I think in my teens or early 20s, like when they broke up Ma Bell, you know, they said that was a monopoly and it had to be broken apart. And like I say, here they say studio systems are illegal. And now in 2020, they're saying, oh, we changed our minds. You can own theater chains. You know, and it's not even theater chains. It's Amazon. It's Netflix. It's, you know, there are all these large corporations or whatever you want to call them that, I mean, they have their own studios. They film their own products, and then they stream them. To boot. So,
I mean, speaking on that, I sent Trek Talking and Beyond, I sent a link to something I found on a website called Dust TV, which was a comedy science fiction show. Now, Dust TV, like Netflix and like Amazon and like the rest of the people, they produce the show. So you can't watch that show unless you have a smart television that will pick up Dust TV.
Right.
And I think, I guess the question I want to ask is, they want to try to reopen Hollywood. Now, I just read an article from CBS All Access about the Star Trek universe, and one of their goals is to have Star Trek, new Star Trek, year-round. No matter when you turn on CBS All Access, you can watch new Star Trek. That's their goal. Now, they're just about halfway there because starting with Lower Decks, which aired last Thursday, we are going to have 26 consecutive weeks of brand-new Star Trek on CBS All Access. Whether you like Lower Decks or whether you like Discovery, that's irrelevant. It's there for you to watch if you choose to watch it. Now, Hollywood trying to reopen, for instance, Supernatural is filmed in Canada. Discovery is filmed in Canada. Lower Decks is an animated series, so that doesn't count. Star Trek Picard is filmed in Hollywood.
Yeah, Picard is in Los Angeles, though, is it?
Yes. So In this article, they said that that season two of Star Trek Picard would air in 2021. Now, how is that going to be possible if they haven't even set a tentative filming date yet? Because Hollywood hasn't gotten its act together. How are they going to do that?
That I don't know. You know, I read an article that, whoops, I don't have it in front of me, but I didn't write it down, is that like close to 500 permits have asking the Film Commission in California, you know, to allow them the film. But number one, the Film Commission has to approve it. The other thing that's going on is early on, there was a joint committee formed of the producers and the unions and IATSE, which is like transportation, makeup, hair, things like that, to come up with guidelines. And just a quick thing in there. So they're still, it took them months to try to put something together because I guess they were arguing what should go in, what shouldn't go in. In the meantime, the governor of California tries to tell the industry, you will start up again on such and such a date. and he was quickly told no by this group, you know, that until they have the guidelines, they're not gonna film. Sorry. But what has happened is that there have been a couple of shows that actually have started filming. But again, well, you know, I try to keep up on what's going on in the film industry. Is it's like one show got approval from the Screen Actors Guild, but I don't know if somebody was on the set or what happened, but in other words, they filmed one day, and the next day, the Screen Actors Guild issues a do not work for this company because they're violating the guidelines for filming. And again, when I say safely, I'm not talking about stunts now. I'm talking about making sure that it's, well, I'll call it, it's a healthy set, that you're disinfecting, you're doing this, you're doing that. So I forget which show it was. I feel like it was a soap. But like I say, they opened one day, filmed, they were shut down the next day. So, you know, it's going to be crazy out there. And I really couldn't. So as for Picard, I mean, unless they start filming it and just keep continuously filming episode after episode, or I don't know. I mean, supposedly you're only supposed to be working so many hours, but I don't know. I don't know if they're going to make a deal with the actors and just try to film these episodes as quick as possible. Maybe there's going to be a lot more special effects in the script and less actors, you know, talking. the starship will be flying for about 5 minutes or something. I'm sorry, but I don't know, you know, or, well, I say starship. Let's say they'll CGI a battle of the various starships for 5-10 minutes, and if you add in commercials, usually an hour show is really only about 47 minutes long. You know, you take away 10 minutes of battleships or ships fighting, then you only have to have 37 minutes of actors talking to each other.
Well, plus also, again, I would think, I mean, irrespective of working continuously, I would think how fast they could spin up would also depend on how much they had accomplished to the shutdown. Like, for example, if all the Picard scripts were written and in final draft or in shooting draft, That would put them slightly ahead if they only had half, other than if they only had like half the scripts done. I mean, it depends upon how much prep work and how much pre-shooting they were able to get accomplished before things shut down, as to how fast.
Right. Well, and again, you know, some of these departments, like computer special effects, you may only need two or three people, and they don't need to be in the same room. Who's to say that the special effects haven't been long done months ago or during the months that the industry's been closed down?
Well, again, that's how Lower Decks got on. Lower Decks got on because it's animated and you just need the animation studio. You don't need really a filming set. So, yeah, that was able to be done because that's just people sitting at workstations. That you can isolate and get done. So, yeah, that's why we have Lower Decks.
Yeah, what happened
right,
with Lower Decks was they flip-flopped it. We were supposed to get Star Trek Discovery last Thursday, and Lower Decks still had two more months of post-production to go through.
Exactly.
And then we were going to see Lower Decks, but they flipped the production.
Yeah. Now Discovery.
So they gave us Lower Decks first and Discovery second.
Yeah. I was going to say something about Discovery, but I don't know how they would write this into the script, or Picard might be a little easier, as they may use a lot of flashbacks from season one with Picard. They might reminisce about season two, you know. So that would be reuse of film, and you wouldn't have to film them, you know, 800, 900 years in the future if they're reminiscing about season two, and you show, again, 10 minutes of battles and 5 minutes of reminiscing. I mean, you know, you could actually do very little new filming with the actors.
Now, speaking of that, Leslie, I remember what I consider to be the worst Star Trek episode I've ever seen, even worse than Spock's brain, was an episode of TNG that they had to, they were under contract during the writer's strike, and they had to get another episode in there. They were contracted for 26 episodes. They had to get 26 episodes. They had to. So you probably remember an episode called Shades of Grey. And Shades of Grey, Riker gets stung by this thing, and it takes over his brain, and he's dying. And Dr. Pulaski has to sort out his memories and bring him back to life. And Riker lays on the table and just goes, oh, and moans. Dr. Pulaski stands there wiggling some tricorders around. And at the end, Deanna walks in and says, I sense that he's fine. And that was the whole episode. But all the rest of the episode was all flashbacks to season one. There was relatively zero new footage in there except for Pulaski waving her wand around, Riker moaning, and Deanna Troi saying, I sense he's okay. Other than that, the entire episode was just clips from season one. That was it. And that was that's how they got that episode in the can.
Right. So you could have they could take Patrick Stewart, Picard, and just have an episode of him going, wow, I remember when, you know, this happened and that happened and then this happened and that happened. And then we finally, you know, whatever, you know, what happened with Picard, you know, telling Starfleet basically to screw it and how we put the group together. And, you know, like you say, you could have a whole episode of just Picard, a couple of face shots of Picard going, boy, I remember this and I remember that. I mean, they're even, if you watch sitcoms every once in a while, one of my mother's favorite sitcoms as Golden Girls. And every once in a while, they're sitting at the table, the kitchen table, eating food, and they're going, do you remember this vacation? Or do you remember that vacation? Or do you remember the time when the, I mean, multiple episodes like this, where the Golden Girls.
But, like, but you really sort of have to be careful with that, because one of the most classic examples of that, and how it didn't necessarily work out, was the original Battlestar Galactica, which was done by Universal, which never really was that large a studio per se. But they spent so much money on the bridge set. The bridge set alone was like a, well, again, you have to figure out at that time in you know, which was like 70s, the bridge set alone was $1.5 million. That what they started to do when they were filming the episodes was had to keep on using stock footage. Because they didn't, towards the end, when it finally went off the air, they had to use so much stock footage that it became almost laughably ridiculous in terms of the show. So, yeah, you can do that, and you can do that successfully. But I don't know if you can do a whole season like that. I think you'd start having people, like, jumping out of windows and leaving CBS Access if you started doing that continuously. I don't think you can do a whole season.
You know what they could do, Ken? Well, if they did it right, one of my problems with Shades of Grey is they just used the same footage in an episode and just showed it to us again and figured we wouldn't notice that this was the same episode. However, let's take a look at The Rise of Skywalker, the last Disney movie. Carrie Fisher died. And they went back to The Force Awakens and used footage that wasn't used in the movie and then reconstructed her scenes for her character, for an actor who was dead, and reconstructed scenes using scenes that had been shot but not shown to us. So when you went to see Rise of Skywalker, you were seeing brand new scenes with Carrie Fisher even though she was dead. Now,
and they actually
CBS,
They actually did that with Grand Moff Tarkin too. I think all of Grand Moff Tarkin was digitally made.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know when he died, but he died way before the movie was shot. So they basically made a digital Moff Tarkin.
But
well, that's the
CBS
other thing
were
is that
to do, if they were to do
now,
a flashback
nowadays
episode.
You can do... Nowadays, you could do digital, well, if the actor's alive, hopefully you're supposed to get permission from the actor. If they're dead, you're supposed to get permission from the estate. But you know, they could CGI an actor. I mean, nowadays, things are that good, which is sad, because it'd be nice that actors could work again. I see time is growing short here. I wanna try to go. So with the guidelines, you know, they have that the temperatures of the cast and crew have to have their temperatures taken when they come to work. Which again, it sounds good, but you could still have the virus and not have a temperature. And then you end up infecting the whole cast and crew. If you're on location, you're supposed to be in one hotel, and you're not supposed to have any outside contact. Now, this other one is something we've been fighting for years. It's funny that it's come up now, is wardrobe should be clean every day and bagged. I mean, we were given the same dirty wardrobe to wear over and over again, and we used to fight about that. Producers didn't care. We got the same dirty wardrobe. Sets need to be disinfected every day. Who's to say what is considered properly disinfecting a set? I mean, is it spraying it with Lysol? Is it wiping down the sets? I mean, you know, like I say, a lot of these are suggestions, but no one's really given an answer. This one makes sense. Separate equipment or you know, makeup, like brushes, whatever, for each actor should be bagged and only used on that actor. That makes sense. As for the stunt community, they didn't even talk to stunt people. They think knee pads and elbow pads are part of the stunt budget. I carried my own stunt bag with my own pads. If there was an actor that needed a pad, I would let them borrow it. So these people that know nothing of the stunt industry are saying, well, you throw away the pads. You buy the pads. Those pads should be part of the stunt budget, and you throw them away after that one actor uses it. Or the other thing is, the larger equipment or even the pads, there are certain disinfectants that have alcohol in it, and it would degrade the pad. It would make the pad dangerous if you keep wiping it down with alcohol. I mean, back to the stunt budget. The stunt budget has always been about how many stunt people are needed on an episode, and if larger equipment is needed, like an airbag or a fall pad, like what high fall jumpers fall into, or air rams. I mean, you know, like you say, this idea of, the stunt people will just, or the stunt coordinators will just buy stunt pads for the actors if the actors need it. Or the other thing is, you know, you're not supposed to be touching people. Well, the whole point of a stunt safety, like in Blood Fever, when I wasn't doing the fight for Torres, I was there to catch her if she would fall or trip over backwards or something like that. So does that mean that stunt safeties cannot be on the set, and if an actor trips and falls, or if a stunt person is about to miss their airbag, you can't push them? This can be done. You can't push them back onto the bag, you know, make sure that they hit the bag a little more. Obviously, they're not going to hit center, but at least they're not going to miss the bag completely. I already said it is, if an actor falls and he's about to hit his head on a table, chair, whatever, with the safety guideline, are you supposed to allow the actor to hit their head on something now? I mean, you know, they have no idea when it comes to stunts. I I got pretty much through the highlights of the safety thing. I mean, they are filming movies in other countries. It just is going to be interesting to see. You have New Mexico, you have Georgia, you have New York City, you have Massachusetts. Well, you know, they have films all over the place. So it's going to be very interesting to see what's going to happen with the filming.
Well, you know what I found interesting, Leslie? I was driving home from camp, and I drove down through Lake George, and I drove by the Glen Drive-In, and up on the marquee it said, "The Empire Strikes Back and Raiders of the Lost Ark." And I was like, oh my God, what an awesome double bill. If I was a teenager back in the 80s, I would be all over that. Like, wow.
Yeah, well, that's something, nothing to do with the current filming, but some people have come up with this rear view projection drive-in theater. There are farms up here, or if there are big areas in towns, they set up these screens, they have the rear view projection, and they're showing old movies, and people are hungry for entertainment. So these pop, what should I call them, pop-up drive-in theaters have been doing really well, as far as I understand.
Now, how do you think, or Ken, my esteemed colleagues that are with me right now, how do you guys think that this pandemic and what's going on with COVID is going to affect the future of movies and TVs? Are we going to see a lot of streaming like we currently are? Or do you think things might come back to normal where they're going to start filming again in Hollywood, or are they going to find cheaper ways of doing it and just not go back to the old ways?
Well, there are articles that say the normal wasn't normal. I mean, so I don't know if that means that people feel like whatever the new normal's got to be better than what the old normal was. Theaters are still closed, so I think movies are going to get made, but I you know, like with Disney or whatever, they're just going to go straight to the Disney Channel or I don't know what the pay for Disney Channel is called, or like I say, Amazon Prime, or you know, you're going to have to buy different I don't know what to call them, companies' sites on television to see the new product, because until they open up the theaters again, I just don't see how they're gonna show new movies. I mean, obviously there were movies that were filmed before the virus struck, and you know, it could take up to a year to edit a film. It could take just a couple of months to edit a film. So there is new films out there. I think I read the live action Disney Mulan. You know, they're planning on releasing that soon. And I mean, it's been ready to go probably for a long time, and I'm sure Disney was hoping that theaters would open up again, but we're still stuck. I mean, it again, until the theaters open up, there's the only way to show new product is through the television set.
Well, Halloween Kills, John Carpenter's sequel to last year's Halloween, is done and was due to be released October 15th of this year. It's already finished, done, and ready, but they don't want to release it digitally, so they pushed it all the way up to October 15th of next year because they want it to open in theaters. They don't want to go digital. Now, I'm just going to ask you, Ken, what do you feel about digital movies versus going to the theaters? Like, if they had a brand new Star Trek movie that was due to come out, say, December, would you rather go and see that new Star Trek movie at the movie theater with a bunch of crazy Klingons? Well, not that you know any crazy Klingons that would go, but if you did. or are you more comfortable watching the new Star Trek movie on your couch streaming it at home?
I think what we're seeing is an evolutionary trend in entertainment. And I think to what extent it becomes overwhelming depends upon exactly the thing that we really can't calculate right now is the movie theater and the theater chains going, first of all, are there going to be any around? Because, I mean, people, I think it's like AMC or one of the chains is virtually bankrupt. I think it all depends upon whether or not there's going to be any survivors as far as theater chains.
Well, I think that's part of the reason that the judge ruled that studios could own theater chains again.
The theater chains are going to go bankrupt. Yeah,
right.
It all depends upon how that plays out, and we're just going to have to wait in terms of time to see that. But
what about you, Ken? Would you rather go and see the new Star Trek movie at an opening with a bunch of crazy Klingons waving their batlets around, or are you more comfortable sitting at home paying to watch it on your TV? What do you prefer as a Star Trek
fan? First of all, let me give you an idea of the last time I was in actual movie theater. Most of the stuff I've been watching is on rent, or I just get DVD. The last time I can remember being in a movie theater was for Prince Caspian and the Dawn Treader, which was the last Narnia film. That was the last time I was actually in a movie theater. So, I mean, okay, do I prefer being in a movie theater? Yes. I mean, I grew up around the corner from a movie theater. Would I prefer it that way? Yes. But I also don't want to have to pay $25 or $30 to see it in a theater. Just for myself.
Ken, that's what it comes down to.
If I can buy a movie for $14 or $16 on DVD when it comes out, and have a copy I can watch all I want, again, there's very little incentive other than the fact that I'm not going to pay $25 in a theater.
Right.
So, speaking for me, Ken, when Karen and Jamie and I are going to go see a movie, it needs to be a good movie. It needs to be a movie that we want to see. There's a lot of movies that come out that I won't pay. Like for me and Karen and Jamie to go see a movie, it's going to run me about $45. Okay, I'm not going to pay that to go and see Steve Martin or something like that. It needs to be a movie that I think is going to be worth the money to see in the movie theater. Otherwise, like you, I'll wait to see it later. Now, in the case of Star Trek
what I've been doing, pandemic, I've been catching up on movies that I personally wanted to see but really couldn't figure out who I wanted to take when it was actually out. But I've been catching up on movies by paying YouTube. So I've been getting my movies off of YouTube. It's hard. It's hard. I mean, again, I love the theaters. I really do. I love the smell of stale popcorn, and floors that you need to rip your shoes off to go and walk on. But not at $25 a pop.
Well,
and certainly,
I think
out. Not for a movie unless I really, really want to see it.
There's really no, honestly, watching a new Star Trek movie sitting on my couch is one thing. Watching it in a movie theater filled with Star Trek fans waving their batlets around and having the time of our lives, there's no comparison. There's not.
I forget which Star Trek movie it was. But I actually took the day off from work, slapped on the old uniform, and this is what I could fit in it, slapped on the old uniform and caught, like, the first matinee at Crossgates. Oh, yeah.
I
agree with you.
I think, Ken, if my memory serves me, and I'm getting old and crusty, but I think that was Star Trek VI.
Could well have been, yeah.
Yeah,
but
in California, if there was a blockbuster movie coming out, let's say at Grauman's Chinese Theater or something like that, they've shown it technically on Big Bang Theory. You would have a group of a line of people that would go down the block and would actually stand outside for the 2 hours, 2.5 hours. If they didn't make it in the first showing, they would stand there for the length of the movie to at least see the second showing of the new movie.
I
just don't know if that's going to happen anymore.
Yeah, I did that for Star Wars 5 at the RKO Theater across the street from Colony Center, because I was like 5 minutes, as far as the line, I was like 5 minutes cut off from the show before. So again, I sat outside for, 2.5 hours till the next show, along with everybody else who was still waiting.
But at any rate, a lot of stuff is streaming now, and with all the streaming, we're getting a lot of studios and a lot of movie producers that normally couldn't get their stuff produced and shown in theaters that are now able to stream it. So that's making more stuff available to us as viewers that normally wouldn't be. So the COVID thing's not all terrible. There is a kind of a silver lining to it, but look at your clock. We made it without even talking about Planet of the Apes.
maybe by the time the theaters open up again, we'll be taken over by apes.
Maybe.
Apes in there.
Maybe there'll be a new Planet of the Apes.
On the screen.
We're up in a lab in San Francisco. That's all.
I want to say thank you to Admiral Ken for hanging out with us tonight and talking about COVID and reopening Hollywood. Thank you, Ken. And
Went away again.
I have to say thank you to the one and only Leslie Hoffman, because we couldn't do the show without her. Thank you, Leslie.
It's good to talk to you. This started like February, March was the quarantine up here, and technically I'm not supposed to even be off the property. Now he's the head guy is saying if it's medical, and I have a very fragile mother, and if I think that she needs a certain kind of food or needs something, I've just come to the point that I consider that if I'm going to get in the car, go get something for her, it's technically due to medical. I mean, I wear my mask. You know, I'm not being silly, but I've had it now. I mean, being locked up in this building, I love this building, but being locked up in this building for almost 6 months is just too much.
Well, you know what? You got us to talk to every week anyways, right?
Believe me, you're my saving grace, is being able to talk to people.
So listen, guys, before we have to go, I just want to remind you all that you can check out the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page. Just head on over there, drop Leslie a line, say hello, tell her you heard the show. If you have any ideas, anything you'd like to hear us talk about, just go over there and shoot us a message, and Leslie will get right back to you. She's really good about that kind of stuff, and we'll see what we can do for you. So check that out, please. Make sure you tune in tomorrow night for Comic Corner. We're going to be talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Too Short a Season, issue 1 of 4, and Star Trek Year 5, issue number 13. That'll be from 7:30 to 8:30. And, of course, Thursday night from 7:30 to 9:30, we have Trek Talking, and we're going to be covering Lower Decks, episode 2, Envoy, And we're going to be talking about the new sci-fi comedy parody movie, Unbelievable. And we may have a special guest with us, so you want to check that out. I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying to everybody, please be good to each other. Please stay safe. And we will catch up with you guys all again next week. Good night, everybody. Hailing frequency.
Good night, Gracie.
Stay safe. Bye.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.